Hi, HR Nation. Welcome back to another episode of the HR Leaders Podcast, the show where we explore the future of work with industry experts and HR executives from the world's leading global brands. Today, I'm joined by Tanya Moore, Chief People Officer at MC Dean. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, Chris. I am well. How are you?
Not too bad. Where are you joining us from?
I am in Reston, Virginia. So United States, East Coast, out by Dulles Airport.
Nice. Are you back in the office? Are you at home?
I am at home. So I am still at home. I'm heading into the office a couple days a week, especially now that I've been vaccinated and so many of us are being vaccinated, but I'm still at home.
Nice. Do you miss it or do you kind of like the freedom, or I'll say the freedom or the flexibility?
Well, for me, it's a little bit of a mix. So I worked from home for years. Prior to coming to MC Dean, I was with IBM for 20 years, and I worked from home for years, whether it was in my corporate role that I had or because I was traveling so much. So I was either on the road with clients and traveling or home. I think now the odd part is being new to a company in the middle of a pandemic and being the chief people officer
of all times
of a company.
Yeah.
Of all times in the middle of the pandemic, that part I do miss because I think it's really important for chief people officers to get out and actually meet people, which we can obviously do, you know, remotely, and we are doing, but I do miss that face-to-face connection from that perspective.
Well, on that point, let's reverse a second. Tell everyone a little bit more about your career background and your journey to where we are now, which is pretty fascinating and obviously given recent events even more interesting.
Sure. So, I mean, I think the thing that I find interesting is I was not one of those people that had this path laid out, you know, and now that I have a 16-year-old and an 18-year-old that are considering college and what they're going to do, you know, I kind of tell them the same thing I did, which is you don't have to have everything figured out because most of the time your career takes these paths that you're like, whoa, how did I end up there? So my example is how the heck did I end up in HR? Because I never in a million years, if you would have asked me, would have thought that. So went to business school, mostly because I didn't know what I wanted to do. Worked a little bit, got my MBA, again, mostly because I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. And as part of my MBA, I not only obviously learned about the business of business, but I learned about the people side of business. So got really, and some of that was because I was horrible in math. So, you know, all the math
next two
stuff,
of us.
I was like, I'll get through this, but you know, that's not one, I'm not great with it and not where my passion is. So I really believed in what people could contribute to business. Now out of MBA school, especially 20 plus years ago when I went, you generally went to Wall Street or you did consulting. Again, not good at math. So I did consulting. Joined PricewaterhouseCoopers, that was also ultimately bought by IBM, and spent the vast majority of my career consulting with clients in the public sector, the commercial sector, the nonprofit sector, you know, across geographies on workforce topics. One of the things that was interesting is between my, you know, the 2 years of MBA school, they make you do an internship. I did an internship in HR thinking, hey, I really like the topic of people. And I left the internship thinking, well, that was valuable because I've decided what I don't want to do, which is HR.
No.
Now, that was 20 years ago.
Yeah, I can imagine 20 years ago.
When HR was administration, compliance,
legal,
paperwork,
yeah,
legal. Complaint, and that's all it was. And I was like, ugh,
yeah,
I didn't understand all this.
Don't blame you.
Be done, but not fun. So that's why I really did. I spent the majority of my career working with clients, which really gave me just an outstanding understanding of, you know, the different topics everyone has to deal with, but yet how the same it is, really, regardless when it comes to people, regardless of industry or geography. And ultimately was asked to join IBM's internal HR team, which is that's where I really did start to learn more about HR. Mm-hmm. And what I discovered there was, because the role of HR really has shifted and really is continuing to shift, because so many companies are still going through this change of the role of HR, my background was super helpful. So to understand business and be connected to business and how HR can contribute to business, I found was super important. And that's really what catapulted me up to lead career and skills for all of IBM through a time of, you know, tremendous transformation. And then ultimately, I went back into consulting with IBM and decided to spread my wings and, you know, try something outside of the home base that had been so good to me, and come here to MCD.
That's so cool. But did you also consult inside of IBM as well? So did you both, was on the practitioner side and consulting at IBM as well, right? So back and forth.
Absolutely.
That's super interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really interesting to have both sides of the perspective.
It gives you a totally different perspective, a totally different perspective. And it's not just on, it gives you the perspective of there's definitely an empathy perspective there. You understand a little bit more about why things happen as opposed to just what needs to happen. And so as you think about it, whereas HR back in the day used to be more programmatic based, like we have a gap, so let's create a program to do this. Well, that's not the way clients think about it. It's not the way practitioners think about it. And so it was super helpful when I transitioned into HR to have that mindset and to have learned from so many different clients in terms of the needs, because you bring all of that, you know, to your next assignment. And that's what really, I think, helps me to be able to flex and adjust, but also see that I'm finding more and more in this space around people and the future of workforce, regardless if I'm talking to a company that's big, small, you know, in education or in aerospace, we're all struggling with the same issues, mm-hmm. the same topics. So that to me is pretty fascinating.
Yeah. Do you think you would be where you are without that mixture of knowledge and experience?
You know, I think it's possible, but I really don't think I would. I mean, could have, you know, hard to have a crystal ball. But again, the people these days that I find are best in HR are people that have the mixture of business. So they have the business acumen to understand the business, and you're not just executing HR for HR's sake. And I very much believe you can be a CHRO or a chief people officer without having been on the other side. But I think, you know, on the client side, but I do think it helps a lot, because mm-hmm. you just, you know, you understand how that can be so symbiotic, and as opposed to it being, you know, a battle with a contractor or something, you understand who all's out there, who's really good at what they do, and how to best leverage all of them as an ecosystem in addition to what your own company can do.
Yeah. No, it's definitely reflected in what I've seen over the last, you know, 3 years and 300 plus interviews that I've done with CHROs. The most successful ones have spent time outside of HR and don't just know the business, but have lived it. You know, it's one thing understanding the business, another thing actually working in the business. So so many times they said to me, you know, I always ask the question, what advice would you give to your younger self? And they always say, get out of HR, go and work in sales for a few years, go and work in production, supply chain, or consulting. And that's kind of what they've said has got them where they are today, as well. None of them ever planned on doing it, by the way. It seemed that it was just, not many of them were intentional about that, but they do credit that for where they are today. So would you recommend that to
others? Totally not intentional on my part either. And if, you know, in all candor, it was significant coaching from my mentors and I still think that this exists in a lot of organizations. HR is still in many organizations looked at as, you know, you've got all these important things and then you have HR.
Isn't that crazy though to think? Isn't
to me, it's crazy to think, because I know.
Yeah, what, you know it. Yeah.
What businesses can do when HR is a strategic partner.
Yeah.
But I remember when IBM first offered me this opportunity, you know, it was my mentor said, "Would you like to do this?" And I said, "No, why would I do that?" And then she's like, "Tanya, how about our growth mindset?" You know, that was years and years ago, but it really, we still do have this kind of, it's less of a battle now in terms of the importance of HR, because it's not just articles being written about it. There's actually hardcore data that shows that organizations that are operating with a modern approach to HR have better business outcomes. So it's not kind of just a nice to have anymore. But there's still so many companies that have a lot of growth to do to get there.
Do you think that the pandemic has fast forwarded that a little bit?
You know, I really do. You know, so for some companies, the bigger, more mature companies, I didn't see as much of an acceleration for those companies. You know, did everybody have to shift? Of course. But for companies that were already used to working virtually, mm-hmm. or working in some sort of matrix environment, or, you know, thinking differently about the skills people need, I didn't see that. But in other companies, and I'll, you know, even in the company I'm in, you know, a lot of companies think that if you're not in the office in your chair, you're not working or you can't work. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow,
it works.
Not only can we,
yeah.
but it's working. You know, I have a friend who is with a company, and she said, "I'm not sure what's going to happen, because we've had our best year yet, you know, all remote, yet our business is so used to being in person and traveling." So I do really think that it has accelerated in many cases the mindset that people had of, well, that won't work, or you can't do this, or you can't do that. The other thing that I think it's really accelerated is this concept of empathy and engagement, and understanding people as people and how you can help them to be themselves, to show up the best for themselves and work. And so, you know, it's not unusual to hear a kid screaming or a dog come around or, oh, hold on, or, you know, whatever that is. And if anything, I think we've been brought into each other's lives more than we ever have. You know, it's like, oh, there goes my significant other, you know. And so you're kind of getting a peek of people's lives that you may have never had before. Mm-hmm. And I think especially as people might have been sick or might have been struggling with working from home. Working from home isn't ideal for a lot of people. A lot of people hate it. You know, they feel isolated. I think there was just more empathy towards all of us as people, which ultimately created new conversations that a lot of times weren't had at work, which, you know, I think in the end, as you think about engagement, shows why engagement spiked during the pandemic, which felt a little counterintuitive.
Yeah, I think people were very surprised about that. But, you know, beforehand, we had like our work life, then we had our home life, and now that has now become one, and we're seeing into each other's lives. We're seeing, you know, oh, that CEO also has a screaming child. And is that what
right.
I say? Or sometimes, you know, even in our house, oh, there's a pile of washing here that hasn't been put away because we're busy and we'll do it later. Like everyone's human, and you leading with empathy has been super important. And the conversations that have come from that around well-being, around anxiety. And even though I've worked with my team members for like some of them over 10 years, I've learned more, probably I'd say, in the last year and in those previous 10 years throughout this.
I just think it has promoted and opened up, like we said, conversations that we never would have had before.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Which I think are all super healthy conversations.
Yeah, 100%.
Because in the end,
this episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. 2/3 of employees have 1 foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
In the end, we are all people, and we all have, whether it's a pandemic or not, good days, bad days. You know, mental health is so important, and, you know, there's a lot of things that we don't talk about. So I think this concept of bringing your whole self to work, that is one that I do hope that we continue to foster even after the pandemic.
That's also one of my concerns, though, as well, because the workplace before the pandemic wasn't designed to have those conversations. You know, mm-hmm. So one of my concerns is that I hope we don't kind of slowly go back. Of course, we're still going to work remote, but we need to redesign work where it is safe to have those conversations and people feel that, you know, they can have that and they're not going to miss out on an opportunity because they feel they may be seen as, you know, weak, you know, or, you know, even I've had friends that have in the past, unfortunately, of female parents that have said, I didn't ask you that if you wanted to go on that trip or that client meeting because, you know, you have a kid, right? And I thought that it'd be, like, they thought they was doing them a favor by, you know, not asking them if they want to be part of this opportunity or perhaps going for this promotion because you seem like you got a lot going on. So I do hope that, yeah, so that is a concern. Yeah.
You know, when I think it's a fair concern, and when I think about it, you know, one of the things that I am so passionate about is leadership. And leadership, even prior to the pandemic, really has shifted in terms of the skills and the behaviors that leaders need to really be strong leaders are actually a lot of the skills and behaviors that we're talking about right now. Mm-hmm. So it's being able to be more of a coach, being able to build a basis of trust with people where, as opposed to if you and I start a conversation, I go straight into task mode, which years and years ago, before I, you know, took a lot of self-awareness and some courses and realized that, whoa, I needed to kind of adjust the way I do things. It's, you know, I was a young mom of two kids. And so my goal was to get in, do a great job and get out. And what I had to stop and realize, you know, back then was there was an empathy piece that felt missing for people. And that to me was a very lucky early discovery because what we're seeing, you know, my oldest is 18 years later, is that concept of how do you inspire people to greatness? It's people operate better just as people when you feel cared about, when you feel like you can trust the person to do right. And I think some of the misconception that you can have some of those conversations. And I think some of the misconceptions that have been had for years is, well, if you do all those things as a leader, you're being soft.
Yeah.
Or you're being easy on people.
Yeah, it's opposite, isn't it? Yeah.
It's totally the opposite. Yeah. So what I find is that those people that you have those types of relationships with, those are the people that you can shut the door and you can say, you know what, Chris, you did an excellent job here. But when you did X, Y, Z, you know, it really was disappointing, or I really do need you to step up and do whatever. Like there, you can have different conversations with people. And a lot of times I think harder conversations with people when we have a basis of trust and respect where, you know, I'm trying to,
it's coming from the right place, right?
And vice versa.
It's coming from the right place. Like one of the things that I value about my friendship and partnership with my co-founder is that we can be kind of brutally honest with each other and hold each other accountable. And but we both know it's coming from the right place because we want to help each other achieve exactly. our goals. But that takes a lot of time to build that trust with someone that
it does.
Yeah, and it doesn't, and you don't the wall doesn't come up and you kind of back off, but that's not something that happens overnight.
And it
but
takes work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It takes work. It takes self-awareness, and it's not like, you know, you don't just generally read a book and all your lights go off. So I think that concept of the new role of leaders, you know, empathy is one thing, but it's being more self-aware. It's understanding that this concept of growth mindset and continual learning doesn't just apply to your team. It applies to you too, whether you're the CEO, you know, or anyone in the organization, and recognizing that we all have the ability to continue to shift and grow and learn. Mm-hmm.
What was it about? Obviously, you had such a successful career, and I'm assuming what kept you at IBM so long was that they let you move into different roles and opportunities, right? So that growth mindset is kind of what triggered that thought in my mind. What is it then that attracted you to MC Dean? It must have been something pretty compelling for you to leave right. that organization and kind of go into this new organization. I'm assuming these conversations took place before there was a pandemic.
So it took me a little while to decide that I wanted to make a shift, because IBM was just so good to me. You know, really an organization that did invest in their people. And mind you, an organization that changed quite a bit over the 20 years that I was
there. Yeah, evolved
a ton, mm-hmm. a ton. And I'm super proud of that. It's hard to do that in life these days, let alone the technology industry. But part of what I realized was, as much as opportunity there was for me at IBM, and I would never in a million years say I never would go back, because I just believe they're that good of level of a company. But I also recognize that as I coach people, you know, part of what I say to them is, be willing to take risks, be willing to, you know, go outside your comfort zone, be willing. And I remember having several conversations at the end of 1 year and hanging up and thinking to myself,
am I doing this myself?
You believe in everything you're saying, but I don't know if you're taking your own advice.
Yeah.
And so it was that was kind of the, again, that awareness bulb that went off for me that said, you're comfortable and you're too comfortable. And when you're that comfortable, regardless of how good of an organization you're in, you're not going to learn and grow. And so that was really just what kind of even opened my mind up. I really wanted to go to an organization where I could leverage everything that I had learned from so many different organizations, working with so many organizations, to help that organization end to end. So if you think about it, from, you know, the thing that I really liked the most when I was with IBM was the ability to be part of our transformation of our people strategy under Diane Gearson, and really watch us just totally evolve the culture of this huge organization fairly quickly, which is pretty amazing when you just think about culture evolution. But from a consulting perspective, I love getting in and working with clients, but you're still in and out, you know? And so to be able to, what really attracted me about MC Dean was to be able to go to an organization where I, you know, the CEO really does believe in the power of people. That was key. Is willing to make investments around that. That's also key, because I've worked with a lot of clients that will say it's important and not
back it up.
Make the right investment. Mm-hmm. And where I knew I could make a difference, where I knew that I could leverage everything that I had done and learned to really help this organization transform our people experience, while being in such a different organization that I knew I would learn and be stretched and grow too. Mm-hmm. So it was really the combination of those things that attracted me.
Love it. And just for people that are listening that aren't aware of the business, give them a quick overview of the organization, what they do.
So MC Dean is a private company. It's about $1.2 billion. We've got 5,000 employees. It's based in Virginia, but we have operations across the globe. And it really is mostly, it's engineering type of work. So if you think about whether it's running a big data, designing and running a big data center, or if you think about how some companies need to be able to, or governments need to be able to have operations, communications, security operations that connect people all across the world. So we work a lot with the government. We work a lot with, you know, the private companies, the names that all of us would recognize on the top 10 list, security, engineering.
It's pretty fascinating as well. Like when I looked at the business, I was like, wow, this is pretty, because it's cybersecurity, but physical. I mean, so it's physical security of these servers, of these networks, and hence why you're working with the government. And I know you work with the energy, everything. I'd never come across a company before that does that. And I was like, oh, there are companies out there that do this. So you're super technical talent as well.
Sometimes we take some of it for a lot of technical talent. And the thing that's interesting about that is we're competing with, you know, if you have a systems engineer, you have a cybersecurity expert, or, you know, even just an electrical engineer, we are competing with, you name it.
Everyone.
You know, from the, everyone.
Yeah, anyone who's everyone. Like you're in a space where that 0.01% talent that everyone wants.
And we do, to your point earlier, we do such unique work. And this is a company where if there is anything that you want to learn or training that you need, you will never get denied for a training request. So there is great opportunity to learn if you take advantage of it. So part of my challenge is we're becoming a great training ground for some of those other companies, which is good and bad.
Do you feel like you need to work on the brand then? Because I was surprised. I kind of make it a point myself to be aware of companies out there. And I was surprised I wasn't aware of the company. Do you feel like that's a big area of improvement?
Well, so I think it's an area that we're definitely focusing. We have an excellent head of marketing. You're going to see great improvements to, you know, not just our website, but our branding. And I think some of it is this company prides itself on customer excellence. So, you know, and it's also been some of what I've liked about my career. My career was less about creating a brand for myself and more about just do a really good job and good things come. And I feel like that's kind of been MC Dean's way that they've grown. Do a really, really good job for your customers and you have customers for life and more come. So it's been less around publicly creating that brand, because it's more just, you know, clients know, if you need this, this is where you need to go. Mm-hmm. But now, especially as we get, you know, more and more into one, this is becoming a hotter and hotter area.
I can imagine. Yeah.
And competition is getting, you know, tough. Branding is something. It's also branding from not only a business development perspective, but from an employee perspective.
That's what I was referring to earlier. That's what I was referring to, the employee brand, especially if you're competing for that talent base. You really need a 100%. Strong, compelling employee brand and a sense of purpose to get the right people.
And so for me, it's not only the brand, but it's the value prop, right?
Yes.
So what is our employee value prop? How is it different working for us than working for others? Mm-hmm. So that's the part that we absolutely are working on, definitely.
Well, I suppose part of the value prop is like you're literally keeping the world running in some instances, like power grids and everything else that I've seen going on there. You're literally keeping...
literally
keeping the world running and moving. That's a pretty strong value proposition to go and work for an organization.
And it's a lot of things that we just all take for granted.
Yes, exactly. Like electricity, like water,
when it goes bad, it goes bad, which is why it's so, you know, so important to really get it right, and why the organization prides itself on doing that.
I can imagine when you first maybe pictured sitting in your first CHRO role, that it didn't look like this going into a new role, mid of a pandemic? How was that? What was the biggest challenge, let's say?
I think the biggest challenge was, so first of all, the organization welcomed me with open arms, even though none of us touched
virtual arms each other, yeah.
with a lot of social distance. But I think that the biggest challenge and the biggest thing, it's not a regret, but I do feel like it's a missed opportunity of being able to really hit the workforce at large. So, I mean, if I think about what I would have loved to have been able to do is go out and physically visited, you know, all of our key sites within the first X months. Mm-hmm. I mean, that wasn't, you know, it truly wasn't possible. And now it's starting to be more possible. So I did have to think of other ways to engage. The flip side of it was it gave me time to learn the business, really, to just get embedded with, you know, some key opportunity areas, key challenge areas, and really learn the business that way, which I think probably accelerated my ability to contribute. So it's definitely, I think it's odd. As I've talked to people, I think it's odd for anybody to have joined a new organization in this time. But at the same time, I think that, again, because there was just that level of empathy there, period, and everybody was kind of learning together, mm-hmm. that was all good.
Did it put back your kind of original plan coming in? I'm sure it must have set back. Did it set back some of the what you're doing because you're also in like crisis mode like everyone else?
No. So that's a really interesting part about working for a company like this, and actually a really nice part when you're a chief people officer, is because what we do is, just like you said, keep the world running.
Oh, so you're fine. You're like, this is you're an expert to that.
There's a lot of risk in that. And so a lot of the work that we do is very high risk. And if you don't do it well, you could have serious, serious injury. So because of that, we have a very, very strong safety department. And the safety department at the beginning of the pandemic formed what we call the rapid response team. And they have really been managing this quite efficiently the entire time. So that was a unique aspect, whereas in most organizations, they didn't have the infrastructure. They didn't have the infrastructure was very basic. Or HR, you know, had to figure out, oh gosh, how do I do some of this on, you know, basically stopping everything.
It fell in HR's lap, right?
Right. And so for me, we were a participant in the rapid response team, but we didn't own it. And so that was an interesting dynamic that we were much better prepared for because of the type of work we do.
Yeah. What do you think you've taken from, I know you had so many cool projects in your time over at IBM as well. What's kind of one project in your career that stands out most to you that you're most proud of?
Oh, wow. That's a really, really good question. So, you know, when I think about what to me I'm most proud of is the time, and I'm going to kind of answer your question a little bit differently, because I think what I was most proud of is the time that I spent leading career and skills for all of IBM globally. What we really started to do at that point, and some of this I think was like stars were aligning, kind of like it is for this now, for people in this business now. But we had a CEO in Jenny Rometty that wanted to shift our focus, you know, more into cloud, more into AI, et cetera. We had a CHRO, Diane Gearson, who was very aligned with her. So when you have that type of leadership alignment, you can do things a lot easier, a lot faster, you know, so that was good. And as I moved into that role, my peers in other parts of the HR organization, so my peer in learning, my peer in compensation, we were very like-minded. So literally when we had breakthrough ideas, I would be calling someone and saying, what do you think about this? And it's like, yeah, that makes total sense. Let's do it. So it wasn't, I was proud of the integrated team that we built cross-functionally and proud of what we accomplished through that, which specifically was the creation of entirely new ways of learning, entirely new ways of connecting from an employee experience perspective. You know, these are the roles and the skills that the market cares about. These are the roles and the skills that IBM cares about. This is the learning, the coaching, the project opportunities that I can get. This is how I can develop my career as a result. This is how it then ties to my career conversation and my compensation. So to me, when you look at what modern organizations are doing, it's that new social contract with the employee and the employer, where you've got to, the employer has to really provide the base of information, the infrastructure, the ability for employees, what I say, to kind of know how to go, know which way to go, give them the opportunity to do that, but then inspire the employees to do the same. And that part of my career was truly just magical, because not only did all of those things come together beautifully through the organization working together in ways that it had never done, but we were able to see the outcomes. It wasn't like, yay, we launched that program. Mm-hmm. We were able to see that these technical sellers have increased their sales revenue by X percent. We were able to see engagement go up. We were able, you know, to see more internal movement of people than hiring people externally. And we were able to see that that's the way that the market really should go. And so we were able to establish that really as leading practice for others. And, you know, that was a pretty, mm-hmm. pretty special part of my career.
Yeah, it does.
I'm fortunate for the opportunity and for all the people that I worked with, because it was, you know, it was a very much a team effort.
Mm-hmm. It does really sound like the stars did align, and so many of your peers refer to the work at IBM as case studies that they look at that inspire the work they do in their organizations. And what you built was very much way ahead of its time. As well, even now I have conversations all the time and people always refer back to the work that IBM's doing. Obviously Diane's amazing as well. so that definitely helps. Is that like, does that give you like added motivation in the role you're in now to try and create something as magical, I say as magical, as impactful?
So absolutely is impactful. I truly do think that environment was pretty special. I think it was the stars and the moon and the sun aligning in a bunch of different ways. And I've seen it happen in other organizations where it's, you know, close to that. But do I absolutely want to create something as impactful? 100%, or I never would have left. you know, I want to be able to bring everything that I've learned so that, you know, this is the place to work in this space in the industry. Because the other thing that's kind of cool about it is, so you can say, you know, all of those things that I just said. And when I talk to people, people will say to me things like, what you did here changed the course of my life, changed the course of the decisions that I made, you know, because I took this path instead mm-hmm. of this, or because we had this career, you invested in me to have this career coaching conversation. And that changed the outcome for my family. Like, so you start to like listen to the impacts that it makes. You know, I'm the first person in my family to have ever done something like this, or, you know, I was miserable doing this and I really spread my wings to do that. And it changed the course of, you know, my life. And so you hear, or somebody that was struggling and their manager didn't believe in them, and being able to build that common trust, to have those really critical conversations a lot of times is all people need to fly. So those are some of the things I'm also really proud of, is to the people that have invested in me and to be able to invest back in people.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I'm going to jump into our quick fire round. So this is something I do with every guest. You wasn't expecting it. No one's ever expecting it.
Let's go.
So I'll ask some questions, and you have no longer than 30 seconds for each question to give us some amazing answers. Are you ready? What was the number one thing that was holding you back from becoming a chief people officer?
Too much comfort. So I was in a role where I was super comfortable, doing great. Why do anything else? So just too much comfort.
Golden handcuffs. Got you. What's the best piece of business advice you've ever received?
I think it's really to understand the business of the business, regardless of what role you're in, is to take the time to really understand what the business does, how they make money, how they find value, and how you can contribute to that. As opposed to just kind of sitting down and understand what your job requirements are and doing them. Mm-hmm. It's really understanding that bigger picture.
Yeah. How would your, I think you said you've got two kids, right? How would your two kids describe what you do for a living?
Oh God, like work too much is what they'd say. You know, I don't even know what they would say.
Yeah, I love asking that question, because
first of all, they're teenagers, so I'm not sure they care other than they have the genes or no. Back when I worked for IBM, they still thought IBM made computers. So we did have to have that conversation.
Okay,
I had to clarify.
That was a long time ago. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, so actually IBM doesn't do that anymore. You know, they know I work. They know I love what I do. They know I work too much. But they also know that I value the balance. And I don't even know if it's the balance as much as it's the integration.
Yeah, I think it's more integration now, right? The balance, yeah, it's... you should ask them later and let me know what they say.
I'm at 100%.
How would you describe what I do for a living? I love to hear what they say as well. What's a common misconception people may have about you?
People may have about me.
A common misconception.
I think people have a misconception that work comes first in my life.
Mm.
So I, because I love what I do, because I put my whole heart and soul into it, I think people have a misconception that work is super, super, and potentially the most important to me. And in reality, I would drop it all in a minute if a friend or a family member needed something. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just in the end, someone told me a long time ago, work to live, don't live to work.
Yeah.
And I really believe that. And as my children were growing up, one of the things I kind of had to coach myself on, as because I can get out of balance with that. I had to coach myself on, if I get hit, you know, by a car this afternoon, am I going to have wanted to go to that conference on my daughter's with my daughter at her school or attend this meeting? So I've had to do things. I've had to just make kind of choices, like remind myself of that. But I think that would be the biggest misconception, is that work is the most important to me.
Mm-hmm. I think we share that one. And I also recently, my daughter's only two, but I've also started having that internal dialogue that you're describing there. You know, is it what would I rather been there or been at that event or traveled abroad or whatever that may be. Yeah.
If it all ends tomorrow, where would I have wanted to have spent that time? And it really, just asking yourself that question, it helps to mm-hmm. keep it in perspective. That, and my husband kicks me every now and then.
That helps.
Might be a little out of whack.
Who in your career, what if you could choose one person in your career that's had the most impact on your career, who would that be?
That's tough because I have so many just fabulous, fabulous people in my life. I do think one person though is a woman named Amy Wright, who leads talent and transformation for all of IBM. So leads our consulting business. She is brave. She is bold. She, you know, is inspiring. She's done fabulous things, and she has challenged me at different points of my life where I needed it, and been incredibly supportive no matter what.
Amazing. Well, shout out to her. We'll tag her. I'll make sure, yeah, I tag her in the LinkedIn post as well. And then last question, you know, well, what's one thing about, you know, your current role and the business that you're most excited about moving forward?
The opportunity to really make an impact quickly that I'm already seeing. So people are just so excited to see the new ideas and the new thinking that's coming. And I'm just really excited to be able to continue to put that all into action. Some of the little emails that I'm getting from people of, you know, I'm so glad you're here because this, this, and this. It's just, again, that's the stuff that matters.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been really cool chatting with you. Hope you had fun.
I have enjoyed it, Chris. Thank you so much.
I know you're thinking, what do my kids think I do for a living now?
I'm totally going to ask them that.
Let us know. Yeah, I guarantee none of my friends could describe what I do for a living as well. So don't worry. He does a show where he talks into a mic. Yeah, I wonder what Robin thinks I do. She's only two, but she kind of points at the microphone and she says, Daddy's working. So she knows there's something to do with a microphone. So that's as far as she's got. But look, I wish her all the best. Look forward to chatting to you again soon. And thanks again.
Thank you.
Keep up the amazing work. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye.